We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the June 3rd, 2012 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Well, thanks for tuning in to this show about our nation's space program. Once again, we've seen history made in space during a mission that launched right here from Cape Canaveral. And once again, we've seen proof that Florida's Space Coast remains open for business and that people of all walks of life remain interested and perhaps even excited about what's going on up there. Well, we'll talk about the general public and the space program as a sort of a theme for the day, as in just a few moments, we welcome in Andrea Farmer from the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, who is here to tell us what's new and what's going on at the Visitor Complex this summer. Your questions and comments about anything having to do with our space program are welcome, too, along the way. Please feel free to give us a call anytime during the program today or send us an email. No question too dumb, no opinion not worthy of discussion. Our phone number is 768-1240. The area code is 321 if you need it. And our email address is spacetalking@aol.com. Well, let's get started today with our edition of the weekly broadcast blog, Orbital Inclinations. Well, with the successful launch, mission, and splashdown of SpaceX's Dragon spacecraft during the past 2 weeks, once again, we have seen the general public, or maybe even the mainstream media, showing renewed interest in our space program. Most of the commentary I've read has hailed the launch of the first commercial cargo delivery mission to the International Space Station as an event heralding the future of spaceflight, a bold new era in which the government takes a diminished role getting into and out of low Earth orbit so that it can concentrate on exploring the unknown frontiers beyond. It all sounds very exciting, especially to the pro-space activists who, well, are all aglow in the aftermath of the achievement by SpaceX. The Space Foundation, the Commercial Space Flight Federation, the National Space Society, the Space Frontier Foundation, and even the Planetary Society and others put out congratulatory releases or statements or tweets. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm giddy too. But the challenge now is to turn that interest and excitement into greater and enthusiastic support for space exploration from the White House and Congress. Unfortunately, as challenges go, well, let's just say that SpaceX getting their Dragon capsule up to the space station was a lot easier by comparison. You see, we in the space community have, well, at least two major problems. First, we can't ever seem to agree on the message. One group says we should go back to the moon. Another says the target must be Mars. Another favors robot exploration of the solar system or launching telescopes to explore the universe. Some groups would promote spin-offs and economic benefits as the reason we should have a space program. Others point to national prestige and national security. Still others talk of destiny and survival of the human species as motivators. As long as we are unable to speak as one community, we will never be as effective as we could be, and we won't be taken seriously. In fact, when I hear of the bickering that goes on among the various groups, I often think that we're no better than Star Trek fans who argue over whether Kirk or Picard is the superior captain. Well, second problem we have is we don't always understand who we should be delivering our message to. Like a bunch of NFL cheerleaders, only not necessarily as cute, we do a great job talking to our fellow space cadets and getting all worked up about how cool all this technology is, how thrilling it is to see a rocket launch, and how inspiring the space program is to children. Now, this is where the preaching to the choir and other religious-themed cliches come in. You know, your church won't grow unless you share your good news with the non-believers of the world. But is it enough to preach the gospel of spaceflight to the masses? Well, I think the answer is no, it's not enough. Here goes with another metaphor. Like any good financial portfolio, you must have a decent mix of investments that represent various amounts of risk and payoff depending on your short and long-term goals. Too often, the space advocates don't get this right and don't work together enough to invest their time and money in a balanced campaign. This week, I read a post on the NASA Watch website that illustrates this point very well. In a series of replies to a comment made by the website's editor, Keith Cowing, and with the headline of "People Listen to Tony Stark, Not to Space Advocates," the president of an organization called the Moon Society, a man named Ken Murphy, wrote this, and I quote, "Here's a question for you, Keith. How many Mensa meetings and conferences, Rotary luncheons, science fiction conventions, museums, elementary schools, and other public outreach events do I have to do to not be considered a space activist only talking to other space activists? What is the threshold of the general public attending my Moon Day events to be thought of as someone who is actually engaging the public? 1,000? 2,000? 5,000? More? How much money does the National Space Society of North Texas have to give away in science fair scholarships? How many toys do we have to donate to our Santa Space Toy Drive? How many space books do we have to donate to the play area at the local flight museum?" He goes on for a while. Keith Cowing's response, blunt and to the point, was, "I have yet to see any discernible alteration in space policy as a result. Sorry." Well, while I often don't agree with Cowing's style, in this case I completely agree with the substance of his response to the Moon Society's president. And believe me, I wish it weren't the case, because this is really the key challenge we face in the space advocacy community. We have yet to find a way to turn all that outstanding public outreach into viable political currency such that every senator, every member of the House of Representatives, and each occupant of the White House, no matter what party they represent, will support a robust national space policy. And while exactly what that national space policy should be is a debate for another time, please don't misunderstand the message now. I'm not saying we shouldn't do public outreach or that all of our efforts should just go toward lobbying on Capitol Hill. Organizations like the Moon Society and the others I mentioned must continue what they are doing. We need planetariums and science museums in places like our own Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex to continue reaching out to the masses and sharing the excitement of space exploration in all of its forms. But it won't mean a thing unless we as space advocates have a coordinated message and a balanced investment portfolio for our outreach that recognizes and deals with the hard realities of politics. Until we in the space community get our act together, we can never hope to realize our collective dreams for a true spacefaring civilization. And that's this week's Orbital Inclinations. Well, when we return from our first break here in just a few seconds, we'll focus on what's new and what's planned for the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex during the next few weeks and months, with the help of the one and only Andrea Farmer. And don't forget, the phone line's open for your questions or comments. Give us a call, 321-768-1240, or feel free to send us an email to spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, please stay tuned. I'm Jim Behnke. You're listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240.
If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to Space Talk, everyone. 321-768-1240, the number to call to participate in the program today. Or you can send us an email to spacetalking@AOL.com, as Pat just did. Pat doesn't say where he or she is from, but the comment was, on my orbital inclinations, the litany is good, but the real answer is all of the above. We never should have stopped. Well, yeah, I think I agree. We need to do all of those things that we mentioned. Again, the point for me is that it needs to be a balanced. It needs to be something that, okay, we make sure we educate and inspire the public, but let's not lose sight that the money and the votes and the control of the national space policy is in Washington, and we have to address that constituency or we're in trouble. And I don't know if we're doing that right. I think we're doing a lot of it, but I'm not sure we're doing it in the right way, despite all the many efforts that are going on and need to continue. So, Pat, thanks for that. Also, on the phone here, a phone call from Jim in Satellite Beach. Jim, are you there?
Yes.
What's the question? You had something about the difference between missiles and rockets. Is that it?
Yeah, I was just curious what the difference was. In the 80s, I was in Lance missiles, which was a guided missile.
Sure.
And I never really figured out what the difference is between a missile and a rocket. I mean, you have unguided rockets, guided missiles. Is there a difference?
There is actually a definition of what makes it different. You have a launch vehicle, okay, and that's anything that launches. A rocket is a rocket, okay? But what's on top of it matters. If the rocket has a satellite or a human on board or something like that, it's considered a rocket or a launch vehicle. If it has a weapon on the top of it, and that makes the difference, a weapon, then it becomes a missile. So a missile has a weapon. Everything else, satellite, humans, cargo, whatever, it's a rocket. And a rocket can be a rocket, and a rocket can be a missile, but a missile can't be a rocket. Did I say that right? So it's all about what's on top of it, Jim, that makes the difference, okay?
All right, thank you.
Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Okay, well, this is great. We're getting a lot of interest in today's program. And you know what? There are a lot of reasons why I love space exploration and decided to live in Florida rather than Houston or California or even Huntsville. But one of the biggest reasons is because of the times that when I visited the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex when I was a kid growing up in Minnesota. Now, this place is truly as important to me as just about any other in my life. It helped shape my direction of where I went. It's much more than just another Florida tourist attraction, and I always look forward to talking about it. We got a lot to talk about what's going on out there this summer as the kids are out of school. To help me with that discussion, my good friend from the company that runs the visitor complex for NASA, Andrea Farmer, is here in the studio today. Andrea, how are you today?
Great. Thanks, Jim. How are you?
Okay, now I introduced you as the person who, you know, from the company that. First of all, I didn't want to get into the titles because I thought we'd be here most of the day because you've got like a dozen different hats that you wear out there. Principally as the spokesperson is probably the best way to say
it.
That works for today, speaking on behalf. Talk about Delaware North. Talk about the relationship between, you know, everyone just thinks it's NASA. Well, NASA doesn't actually run the visitor complex. You have a company. You work for a company. Talk about that relationship.
In fact, the visitor complexes for any of the NASA organizations are run by different organizations or associations. For Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, I work for Delaware North Companies. We all do out there. And Delaware North Companies operates the visitor complex on behalf of NASA. We work very closely with NASA on every aspect, from the maintenance to facilities, exhibits, to the marketing and programming that takes place at the visitor complex. So we tell the NASA story. That's our mission.
So the NASA story is, I mean, there's so much more going on out here than just NASA, you know, and we always are fighting over the idea that, you know, every launch is from the Kennedy Space Center, even though you have Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. Are you allowed to tell the other parts of the story? Is this what you're contractually bound for? I mean, what kind of flexibility do you have to tell the space story beyond just the NASA story?
Well, let's talk about the different rocket launches that we have taking place.
As opposed to missile launches.
As opposed to missile launches. That was really good. You did a great job with that answer. we are able to talk about those other rocket launches, although when it's a classified Department of Defense operation, then
yeah, nobody's
we can't
able
really
to talk
say
about
a
it.
Whole lot about it. So, but at least we can talk about the vehicle and that it's launching from here, and that launches are really cool, unique opportunities to get people engaged about the space program. Come out. It's exciting. It's thrilling.
Now, this is let's talk about let's get sort of the little controversial part out of the way first so we can talk about more about the fun. One of the there is still a sentiment, Andrea, as you know, strongly out in the local community here, who people who've been around forever, Apollo and all that, still can't quite get over the fact that you have to pay admission to get into the visitor complex. And they start throwing out things like, well, our taxpayers have already paid for everything, and it's a NASA facility, it's federal property, and you have no right, no business, or whatever. Now, when all this first started, I kind of was like in that camp. I thought, well, what's really going on here? And as time has gone on, I've completely reversed my thought on that. Talk about kind of why there's paid admission and what do you get to do with that money and what are you allowed to do with it?
Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to that, because
not planned in advance.
We want to, no, it's true. That's true. We want to tell the NASA story. And in order to be able to do that and engage people and provide something more than just rockets and a rocket garden or a few movies in the IMAX, we, with admission, are able to expand the storytelling through different experiences that are exciting. They're engaging. People will have a good time. They'll want to come out and learn more about the space program and support the space program as a result of that. And since we've begun with the admission, we've been able to do things like the Apollo Saturn V Center,
right,
and upgrade the tour experience to engage more communicators and educators to help in telling the story and being having a more personal experience with the guests.
It's a much more quality experience. And what I remember from when it all started and the first kind of attendance figures came in, and here's the thing that people don't know, which is really interesting to me, is that, you know, there was the sentiment that said, you're going to charge admission to this place and nobody's going to come. How dare you pay that much? Families can't afford it. Nobody, I mean, Disney's bad enough. We can't possibly, you know, afford another day. And yet, when you put the gate up and you put the ticket booth in place, attendance went up.
It's about the experience and the perceived value.
Yeah.
And we live here in Central Florida where we've got all kinds of opportunities, all types of attractions and theme parks. If you're free, it might lead you to believe, well, the experience may not be that good. I think I'm going to go over here instead. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a way to compete, if you will, with some of the other attractions and theme parks that are in the area. We work with NASA on the pricing as well, because
right,
we've got to keep it affordable for people. And we want to offer them just a quality, unique, great experience that's something for the whole family.
Well, your contract with NASA very clearly lays out kind of what you can charge, what you can do, what you can't do, what money you can use for what, and really even to the extent of how much profit you make, which is not too unlike the other contracts that are out there for doing a lot of other things, you know, more spacey.
Right. We have to deliver on this promise to tell the NASA story and to do so in an engaging way. And we're held to that.
Wow. That's
very high standards by NASA, as well it should be.
Hey, we have a phone call. It's not on topic of visitor complex, I don't think, but maybe it will be. But Bruce from Vero Beach has a quick question. Hey, there you are. How you doing?
Hi, good. How are you, Jim?
I'm doing great. What's going on?
Great. Perfect. Since you're talking about money anyway, I just was listening to your show, and I thought that to prompt about your opening remarks, to prompt Congress to allocate more money towards the space program, I thought that if the people could understand how huge a job creation vehicle NASA and all the related space programs are, and it's the original trickle down, except it's more like a torrent.
Yeah, right. Really.
And if you could speak to that, and if there could be some research done as to, you know, for every tax dollar spent, how many jobs are created.
Sure. Well, Bruce, thanks for the comment. We'll talk about that here in just a second. Well, actually, let me mention real quick, jobs. You know, when we talk about the space program creating jobs, too often lately in the current era, you know, it's like you can't have it both ways with everybody. If you want a space program that creates jobs, then the critics say, well, that's just corporate welfare or pork for the local congressman. You know, it's like, how can we do this program without people having jobs to do the program? I mean, you got, and so therefore, if you invest the money in the space program, you will get jobs as a natural product of it. Is it the only reason to have a space program? No. If the only reason you're going to have a space program is to keep people employed, well, then that's corporate welfare, and I'm not for that. I think it's great if you have a robust space program that the company, you know, the nation's investing their money in, therefore companies can hire people and go do these remarkable things, then that's the thing. And then that is the trickle-down, yes, because when you have an industry, as we've seen in the Space Coast, you know, if you have all these people working here locally, then that supports the grocery stores and the gas stations and all of the retail businesses. And so it does help stimulate the economy in a way that maybe sometimes other businesses can't. And it's good for the nation, and it's good for the soul, and it's good for the future of our species, and all of those reasons, and much, much more. Andrew, you got to take a break here, and so lucky you. We'll come back to you in just a few minutes here. We're going to stand by here, take our five-minute built-in hold at the bottom of the hour, get everybody caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports, then we'll come back, talk more about the visitor complex. In the meantime, your questions and comments still welcome. 768-1240, the area code 321. Email is spacetalking@AOL.com. We'll see you in about 5 minutes. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Bankey.
And welcome back to our second half of Space Talk here on WMMB. Our phone line's open for you at 321-768-1240. The email box is currently empty. It's spacetalking@AOL.com. We always welcome your comments there as well. In the studio with us today, Andrea Farmer from Delaware North, the company that operates as the concessionaire for the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. We've been talking about what's going on out there, and there's a lot, Andrea, going on that's new this summer. Kids are out of school. People are looking for things to do. I'm sure there's a discount or two for Brevard residents we could talk about. What's going on up there? What can we look forward to this summer up there?
Well, real quick, for those with kids, we've got Camp KSC, and we have week-long sessions. Yeah, that begin June 11th. And it's a great opportunity for kids to come out to train on astronaut training simulators. These are all motion-based, so okay. There's a lot of fun there.
Whipping them around.
Exactly. That multi-access trainer will do it every time. They break up into teams to investigate space travel. How are we going to get to places like the moon, Mars, asteroids? We got a lot to learn, and we're hoping that kids can help us with
so that. So a day camp means that they drop off in the morning, pick up in the afternoon.
Exactly. And they spend the day with us, with our educators. And that lunch and snack is included, a T-shirt as well.
Wow,
so we take really great care of the kids.
So is it a week-long thing? They come for like five sessions?
5 days, Monday through Friday.
Really? Now, we have been missing, quote-unquote, space camp, trademark, registered, for a long time. We used to have a Space Camp Florida out here. And, of course, the Astronaut Hall of Fame was kind of the home base for Space Camp. The old dormitory building still sitting out there. I don't know if it's any kind of – did it get torn down?
It did.
Really?
It did. When did last it get, year.
Last year? See, I was in the hospital. I must have missed it, you know?
That's right.
And I keep driving by there all the time, and you look at the shuttle, and, you know. By the way, does that shuttle still work?
It does.
Does it really?
It does.
So we still have our own full-scale shuttle a person could walk through. Even though it's not a real shuttle, it's a theater.
It's part of our astronaut training experience or part of the Camp Kennedy Space Center program.
Really? So, really? Okay.
Yeah,
so kids can do that. We've got what other things going on? No one's going to forego an extra day at Disney just to come out and see the new main entrance of the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. But nevertheless, you do have something new out there, don't you? You have some construction going on.
We've got a lot of construction going on, and one of those projects is for a new main entrance.
Yeah.
It's going to be a so much easier way of entering. It's also going to introduce you to what to expect at Kennedy Space Center. We're going to have... And it's going to cool you off at the same time.
Okay.
And this is all part of a 10-year master plan to redevelop the entire visitor complex. So we've got a lot going on, and there will be for the 10 years coming up. The new entrance will speed your entry into the visitor complex and give you a snapshot of what you're about to experience.
Of all the different things.
Yes.
You know,
and it's going to start you where you enter in the Rocket Garden.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, I mean, of all the great things that are out there, I'm still partial to the Rocket Garden. I could spend all day sitting out there staring at those rockets, you know, because that's Kennedy Space Center.
Exactly.
That's Florida. And the fact that you're going in, and I don't know, thematically, Andrea, is the idea that part of the idea that you walk in and you get – it's the history. I mean, because if you start at one end of the park and work your way over, even to the bus to the extent where you're going out to the Saturn V Center and see the old shuttle pads. God, I said the old shuttle pads. Can you believe it? I think that's the first time I've said that. It is past, present, future, isn't it, in a kind of a weird way?
It is, and that's how we're redeveloping the park. So you will begin in the Rocket Garden, that iconic Rocket Garden, and begin with the Mercury Gemini programs, and then – on the tour, you'll capture that Apollo space program, and it's all leading us to the Shuttle Plaza where Space Shuttle Atlantis is going to be.
Yeah, like there was ever any doubt we would get one, right?
We were in big doubt. I've got to tell you, until we heard NASA Administrator Bolden say, at Kennedy Space Center.
Yeah, I remember that day.
It was just a huge amount of relief in the room.
We had tried so hard and worked so hard for so long to get that thing here.
We couldn't have done that without you.
Well, I just had a small part, but anyway.
The community, just all the outreach to elected officials and just the support, it was tremendous. And already, if you go by the visitor complex, there is a huge amount of steel out of the ground in Shuttle Plaza. We are working hard and working fast and looking towards November to have the actual rollover of Atlantis from Kennedy Space.
Fireworks?
You never know. We are working on some big plans for
that event. That's going to be really neat. And Atlantis, of course, the big deal about Atlantis, you know, Discovery's up at the Smithsonian sitting on its landing gear. Endeavor going out. Basically, really, I guess when he put it this way, all three of them are just basically going to be sitting in there on their landing gear for people to walk around. Our exhibit, completely different experience, and I think it's really cool. Talk about that.
We're going to position Atlantis like she's in orbit,
right?
And with the payload bay doors open, there will be multi-level viewing. So from beneath, you'll be almost close enough to touch one of the wings. And so you're going to be that close to Atlantis.
And it's not just like a wraparound ramp. There's actually a floor space underneath it, like the Saturn V Center in a way, where you can walk under it.
So you'll see those tiles, and it'll be at an angle. So you'll be able to see those tiles, see the underneath of the Atlantis. By the way, we said to NASA, please don't clean her up too much. We want her to look dirty because that's space travel, baby.
Right. That's a reusable vehicle.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, and then from the upper level, you'll be able to look inside the payload bay. Uh-huh. And then we're also using some new technology so that you can touch a screen and actually look inside to see the crew cabin and what's happening. Well, you know, to preserve the vehicle, we couldn't let folks walk in. But this way, you can see inside Atlantis from up close.
Well, and as Atlantis building prepared, we've been seeing in the news this weekend, of course, we saw the space shuttle, I guess it was Explorer was its name, that had been out in front of the visitor complex for so many years. I think they're calling it the high-fidelity mock-up.
Yes, that's it.
Give it a nice name, make it sound fancier than maybe it really is. But that was a great experience to be able to walk in there and walk up those ramps and go inside and see the payload bay and see the mock-up of the cockpit. That's now at Space Center Houston. It just arrived on the barge at NASA Road 1, I think yesterday or the day before, something like
that.
You miss it yet?
We're so excited about Atlantis. Yes, we miss Explorer, but
this is the real thing.
We've got the real space shuttle coming in, and that'll complement having the Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo capsules at the visitor complex as well.
That's right. And will those stay where they're at? I mean, the shuttle building is the shuttle building, and everything else kind of stays where it is. You're not putting them all under one roof, are you?
We won't put them all in the shuttle exhibit. That's not to say that some items won't move as we fulfill the rest of the 10-year master plan, because
I heard that of all the crazy things, because we work in the public affairs world, you and I, that the public affairs council from the firing room, the one that George Diller and Lisa Malone and Hugh Harris and all the rest called the launchers from, is going into, I think, the shuttle exhibit here at KSC. I'm not sure where it is, but that's what I heard. It was being pulled out of the firing room and was going to wind up on display at the visitor complex. Have you heard that yet?
I haven't heard that yet.
Okay.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Jim, now I'm going to go check that out.
I just figured that I was teasing George Diller about that the other week. I says, can all the kids sit at the chair and pretend they're counting down? You know, I mean,
Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be so great.
Well, and speaking of that, though, people can go inside the vehicle assembly building.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what's the deal with that? That's you take the tour. The regular tour, and then there's a sort of a bonus tour that you can buy, basically.
It's the KSC Up Close Tour,
right,
which is an additional fee, but that takes you to different spots within Kennedy Space Center. But the real highlight is being to walk inside the Vehicle Assembly Building, which folks haven't been able to go inside since 1978.
Yeah.
We don't know the next time this will happen.
Well, yeah, and how long it'll last. I mean, the Space Launch System that's on tap, funded, we don't know. The future is the future. But when that starts processing solid rocket boosters, then everybody gets kicked out of the VAB again.
That's right.
And so that's still a couple of years away, we think. But so what, the guys drop you off at the transfer aisle, and you walk in a few feet, look up, get dizzy, walk out?
Well, you actually go to High Bay 4.
Yeah.
And we've got different items or space artifacts or even spacecraft could be in there. I believe back in July, we're going to have another orbiter inside the Vehicle Assembly Building. But in the meantime, there have been Orion mock-ups, the cranes. We've had the cranes come down from high above so that you can see those. The Astro Van is inside there as well. And we're working on some other cool opportunities for the Vehicle Assembly Building. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned. There used to be a chance. The last time I was in the VAB as a tourist was, well, back in the 76, 77 time frame. I remember that I can't remember that the bicentennial stuff was still set up. I can't even remember that the Saturn V rocket was laying out on the side at that point. All I remember as a kid was being able to walk into the VAB and the full-scale Apollo Command Service Module was shown being docked to the full-size scale Soyuz model that's now hanging in the Early Space Education Exploration Building. And at that same time, we were then allowed to go into the firing room, and I remember climbing up the steps, walking across the top row and climbing down the steps and back out again. I can't remember what year it was, and I want to say it must have been in the 77-ish time frame because you were post-Apollo Soyuz, pre-shuttle, and a remarkable time. That visitor comp, I was going to share this with you, Andrea. There is a website, and I'm on Facebook with it, and I think it's called Retrospace Images. And I needed to get to know the guy a little bit better that runs it. He has got a collection. He's got the most remarkable collection of photos and images about our space program, many of them centered on operations here at Kennedy, and a ton of pictures of the visitor complex through the years. Back to when it was just the original. There used to be, and again, I know this predates you, and I don't know, when was your first experience at the visitor complex? Was it when you came to work for Delaware North?
No, it was before that. I'm a Florida girl, in fact, born in Melbourne. So,
really? I didn't know that.
My dad worked for Apollo, so it's really neat. I think my dad's so proud. Well, you're working at the visitor complex.
So do you remember the visitor complex as a kid?
I do. I remember as a kid we went a couple of times.
You remember when it was like the one big building that had a theater on one side and a science exhibit on the other, a middle hallway, and then sort of the gift area staging offices on the other side?
And that's it.
Okay, we'll talk about where it went from there after that. Hey, everybody, stand by. We're going to take our final break of the day. When we come back, we will wrap up our discussion for the week about the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. Plus, we'll take a look at our local launch forecast. I'm Jim Behnke with Andrea Farmer here from the Visitor Complex. You're listening to Space Talk here on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240.
Well, welcome back again as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk with a quick reminder that you can stay in touch with us throughout the week. If you're on Facebook, just search for Space Talk. You'll find us. If you're on Twitter, look for Space Talking. And for one-stop shopping about everything having to do with our program, visit WMMBAM.com, keywords Space Talk. And as we continue along with our program, let's take a moment for our weekly look at the local launch forecast. Well, Last week's news is this week's news. The next launch from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, now targeted for June 18th. A United Launch Alliance Atlas V rocket is to fly from Complex 41 with a secret satellite for the National Reconnaissance Office. We don't know what the launch time is right now. We'll learn that when we get a little closer to the date. We'll certainly keep you up to date on that as well. Hey, coming up pretty quick here is a launch of the New Star X-ray satellite from the Kwajalein Atoll. We had Garrett Skrobot on a couple weeks ago talking about how Kennedy Space Center is supporting that launch by sending a team out to the South Pacific. Lucky them for that launch. It's coming up, by the way, that that rocket and satellite rolled out from where it is housed at Vandenberg Air Force Base here, so that mission is proceeding. Also have a Delta IV Heavy flying sometime in June as well. Monster rocket, as I've said before, it still scares me half to death, even though it's worked just fine. This is one giant, weird-looking rocket. It's really cool. So anyway, for more information about all the various launches scheduled around the world, jump on the web to WMMBAM.com, keywords Space Talk. You'll see the link to our launch forecast at the left. That'll take you to a page of some of the best websites out there for keeping track of the worldwide launch schedule, including my favorite, spaceflightnow.com. With us today, again, Andrea Farmer from the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. School is out. Kids got stuff to do. Even after all these years, we still learn that there are kids who grew up, born and raised in Brevard County, not like you, who have never been to the Visitor Complex. And although we try to get every sixth grader out there every year in the fall as part of a program that we do with the National Space Club Florida Committee and the Brevard Schools, there's still a lot of Brevard residents that have never been to the Visitor Complex. Andrea, does that, like, amaze you? Sorry.
That's okay. We invite them to come out and learn about the rich heritage of our area. The space program for the past 50 years, we've just done so many things from Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, sure, to the space shuttle, and now looking towards the future at the Visitor Complex. This is a way in one day to get to know your space program.
Well, and there's so much to learn, so much to see. You know, between the exhibits that we've talked about, the astronaut encounter, a chance to meet an astronaut every day.
You can meet someone who's been there and done that, and they talk about their space flight experience, and that's great for kids to be able to ask questions besides, yeah, how do you go to the bathroom in space?
Right, but, right. John McBride is sort of your resident astronaut out there, and I wanted to give – I know he's traveling today. We'll give a shout-out to him. John's a great guy.
He is.
How neat is it to have a resident astronaut there to – well, not necessarily just to have lunch with every day. I'm sure he doesn't do that all the time. You've got other guys coming in all
we
the time.
Do.
Talk about how that astronaut encounter works.
About every week we have a different astronaut in, and 2 to 3 times a day we'll have half-hour presentations where the astronaut, you know, this week it's J.O. Crichton.
Okay.
Coming up too is Roger Crouch, Sam Durant's after that.
Sam's great.
And then John Blahoff.
John's good, yep.
6 missions on.
Yeah.
Just amazing backgrounds that all these guys have. But they give a half-hour presentation. They'll talk about their spaceflight experience, why they got interested in becoming an astronaut. And that's when people go, wow, they're like me.
Right.
I mean, we all could do this if we wanted to. And it's you can do anything. You know what? There's the one thing about after visiting Kennedy Space Center is you're left with, we have done amazing things as mankind. And what started out as a dream, we've been able to do, you know, the ultimate walking on the moon or putting Hubble into orbit or building the International Space Station. So I hope that people after a day at Kennedy go home energized and realizing we can accomplish anything.
Yeah, and you know, and just as the outsider looking in, and I know, again, we talk about your relationship with NASA, and NASA tries to be fairly apolitical. But, you know, and I don't need you necessarily to comment on this, but I do want to make the remark that one of my things that I wish we could do more of is that when people leave that visitor complex, not that they've taken a quiz or passed a test or whatever, but that there is some form of engagement afterwards, that there is some kind of sense that, okay, now go home and tell your congressman. Now go home and do something with this. Share what you learned. Stay in touch with us. And I know there are ways to stay in touch. And, in fact, you and I are working on some stuff together that they're going to lead to that with some kids. But all sorts of opportunities to get people excited. And this is part of the mix of things that need to happen to keep support for our space program going. And that's why I think it's so important to talk about it, not as one big, giant, extended commercial for the visitor complex, but to really say that this is an asset to our community and an asset to the space community that we don't want to lose sight of and lose touch of. And on that note, 50 years at Kennedy Space Center – This is the golden anniversary this year. 50 years ago, July, we became the Launch Operations Center, an official NASA center. There's got to be stuff we're doing out there, some of them which I know about, that we're that you're planning, that you are doing right now to celebrate the 50th anniversary.
Right, and we're working on plans for July 1st, since it's been since that time frame. Also, neat to know, just a little trivia, that it started out as a Launch Operations Center, as you said, and then a year later became the John F. Kennedy Space Center, sure, named after our president, who really, he sent us to the moon.
Right. Hey, and don't try to out trivia me here. Do you know what it was before the Launch Operations Center? I'll tell you. No, you're close. It was the Launch Operations Directorate, which was an organization attached to the Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville. So we were just sort of a, you know, this is where you went to launch and leave, a culture that stuck with us for a long time. And before it was the Launch Operations Directorate, the very first name for this area that eventually became the Kennedy Space Center was the Merritt Island Launch Annex, which is where we get Mila from. And which is where we got the Mila Tracking Station, which is now closed, which is where we get Mila the restaurant that used to be at the visitor complex, which is where we get Mila the dog, which would have been the Banky family dog had we ever had a Banky family dog. And it's where I get my company name, Mila Solutions. So when we talk about Mila Solutions on the air, it comes from the Merritt Island Launch Annex, the original name of the Kennedy Space Center.
So we're really celebrating your anniversary when it comes down to it.
Well, I happen to be the same age as the visitor as the Space Center, so it's just kind of a rough year right now. But anyway.
I'm not too far behind you.
Yeah, I know you aren't. Andrew, we're running out of time. Thank you, sweetheart, so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate you. You're a good friend, and we have a lot of fun together, and we're going to continue to do that. As the visitor complex, boy, it's summertime. Go out and see it. Make sure you do. Hey, don't forget as we wrap up that our inbox at spacetalking@AOL.com always open for you and for one-stop shopping. As we said, you can just point your browser to WMMBAM.com, keywords Space Talk, where you can find a podcast of today's program along with links to an archive of previous shows and, of course, our online version of Orbital Inclinations, that and so much more with everything else going on here at the station at WMMB. That is it for now. Again, we thank you for joining us today for this episode of Space Talk, a production of Mila Solutions. Now you know where the name comes from. It is brought to you thanks in part to the generous help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technology, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. My thanks, as always, to Sean Williams for manning the ops station for today's program. Please join us next Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for another live hour of Space Talk. Stay tuned now as WMMB presents a weekend edition of the Best of Bill Mick Live. I'm Jim Banky. We'll talk to you again real soon.